It's time to talk your pet's health now with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. And if you have a question about your pet's health or about pet health in general, we welcome your calls at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
It is so nice to be back.
I picked up the Capital Times last night and opened it up, and who do I see
being
quoted? Oh, I didn't see you. I saw some labradoodles.
Yes. Yeah. I did get a phone call last week regarding this article that they were doing on the new designer breeds of dogs, all the mixes that you can put together. And, of course, some of the most popular ones are the labradoodles and the golden doodles. And you know, as a veterinarian, it's a crapshoot. That's how I was quoted as saying, as to what you're going to get, because genetics just doesn't work that way when you start putting two dogs together. And we just had a dog in last week that was a golden doodle. Golden retrievers are noted for being like the poster child for allergies. And so when dogs get skin allergies, their symptoms typically are inflamed, painful ears, licking their feet and so on, and, you know, just being itchy everywhere. Well, this dog had that part of the golden. It had, you know, seasonal allergies, but it had a lot of oodle in it as well. And the poodle ears are full of hair. And so now we've got these hairy ear canals with lots of inflammation and moisture and hairy feet and this poor dog is just miserable. So, you know, just it's consumer beware. Do your research and, you know, mixes are, you're spending a small fortune for them too. A lot more than you would the purebred counterparts.
Yeah, there was a funny ad that a Miller beer, there was a picture of a Miller beer poster or something with a sign that had the, I think it was a labradoodle or something anyway, cost $1,600, six pack of Miller beer, $6 or whatever.
Yeah.
And saying, well, we haven't totally lost our
minds. That might be in some parts of the country. In this area, you know, I've seen them mainly about $1,000 for a mixed breed dog. So, yeah.
But really what you have is kind of a mutt.
It is. You can't show it, you know?
And speaking of poodles, Angela and Nina, I think, has a question relating to poodles. Hi, Angela.
Hi. I have a 2-year-old poodle named Max, and he loves riding in the car, and he never had problems during storms. And this spring, he became totally freaked out at any thunderstorm. Now he's afraid of, you know, fireworks, and putting him in the car, if it's a ride around town and the window's down, he's fine. But when we go to, like, visit my parents, where he lives, he's, like, doing laps around the car. He's panting. His heart's racing, and we can't comfort him.
Okay.
So I contacted my vet, and he gave me medication, which I can't put my hands on right now. You have to give it to him an hour and a half before.
It's probably what's called aspromazine, which is a sedative, not an anti-anxiety drug.
Well, it didn't do much as a sedative either.
Because they override it. They override it. And that's why we don't recommend using it.
Okay.
Unless, you know, you need to have a pancake of a dog and you have to use it at fairly high doses, and they can override it as well. So, this is a real dilemma. A lot of phobias start at about this age. You don't see it as puppies. You may be some very mild things that you didn't pick up on. And then all of a sudden, you know, we start seeing them generalized to maybe having one thunderstorm trigger it. And now it's like everything that makes noise can cause problems. Few things that you may want to look into. Number one is talking to your veterinarian, or they may even be available at pet stores now. They have these collars for dogs that have dog appeasement pheromone. They're called DAP collars that the dog can wear. It's a natural pheromone that has a calming effect on dogs. Again, it's not going to hurt the dog. Very mild, but may help. There are some over-the-counter products you may want to try. I call it the beer, tea, and turkey treatment. It's chamomile. Stay with me now, okay? Which is the tea component.
Okay.
Hops, which is the beer component. And tryptophan, which is the turkey component. Okay, so those are the main ingredients. Goes by various different names. So you could try that as well. You may want to talk to your veterinarian too about, especially for car rides, there's a cap that dogs can wear. The people that make the gentle leader dog collars have this thing that's it looks like a little hood that you would, you know, put on a falcon or something, you know, that, and it just blocks their vision. They can still see a little bit through it, but it blunts their vision. And for some dogs, that kind of makes them feel more comfortable, especially the dogs that like to, like, burrow under blankets when they're scared. That may make them feel more comfortable.
Well, we've noticed that when, on the car ride especially, he wants to be standing up, looking straight out. And if I try to, like, I thought if I could just get him to snuggle or hide, but he wants to be looking like he's panicked if he can't see.
Can't see, yeah. And I mean, you may even try just seeing if a carrier would work, too, because sometimes carriers will, again, give that dog a sense of security. So giving that a try. There's also a device called the anxiety wrap. It looks like a vest that the dog would wear, and it kind of works on acupressure points. Again, not going to hurt the dog. You can go online. It's sometimes, if you do a search for Thunderwear, that's where you may find it under that, okay? It is not underwear by any means. It's a vest that the dog would wear. And then you're looking at some big-time drugs, anti-anxiety drugs. And this, if your dog is that anxious and is having that much distress, you may be worthwhile, especially with so many things bothering the dog. Using one of these daily medications during the season may be helpful. Or if you're really good at predicting the storms, using one of the benzodiazepines, like a Valium-type drug, prior to the storm starting. Once the storm, the anxiety is already there, these drugs don't work very well. So, you know, that's the problem. You have to be at home and watching the dog all the time.
So a few things to think about. Good luck.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling, Angela. Appreciate your call. Lynette in Hubertus, it's your turn. Hi, Lynette.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a year-old male neutered that I got from the Humane Society at 11 weeks. And so he was neutered when I received him.
Now, is this a cat or a dog?
It's a dog.
A dog, okay.
And he's a German Shepherd, we think, mix.
Mm-hmm.
And he's weighing in at about 40 pounds right now. And since I've had him on the chicken soup for the Dog Lover's Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves it, and everything seems to be going fine. However, his urine seems to be destroying the grass.
Oh, yeah.
And I've had females before and never had that much of a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it his diet?
Nope.
I've tried to water down each time he goes. I've tried to water it down. It doesn't seem to be helping.
Yeah, and so you're watering down his food?
No, I'm watering down after
where
he goes.
Yeah.
I take a bucket and water it down. And
bucket
it
isn't enough.
To be helpful.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to, I mean, you really have to, like, flood the area. My yard, same thing. I have two dogs now, and when the female squats, the male will go over top of it, so it's like double duty. You know, they're marking over each other's urine, and I'm losing grass, and then have the nice tall, beautiful grass next to these yellow spots. There are some over the counter products; they don't work very well. That are supposedly urinary acidifiers. I have not had much success with it, and I'd really check with your veterinarian first before you put your dog on something like that, because they're contraindicated in certain types of kidney and bladder problems, especially if your dog has certain types of bladder stones. You'd be, you know, really putting them at risk by using that type of product. That, like Larry said, lots and lots of water. Target train your dog. That is probably your best bet, is actually put your dog on a leash. Train them to go to one area of your yard to go to the bathroom rather than just willy-nilly around the yard. If you can target train them to an area that you don't care about as much, preferably with whatever, you know, surface material, you know, the dog likes to go on, maybe grass, it may die, but, you know, it's in an area where you don't care. And just reward the dog when they start going in that area by, you know, they get, you know, a handful of cookies or whatever when they hit the target, and maybe just when they go to the bathroom outside, an attaboy, you know, like, oh, okay, fine, you did a good job, you went to the bathroom, but we really want you to go over here. And that may work. Being a male dog, does he lift his leg?
He has not figured that out yet.
He may never. Okay. And it's one of those things. He's neutered, and he may or may not do it. Because if he's a leg lifter, sometimes you can provide him with a nice vertical object to go to the bathroom on. So, oh, yeah. Welcome to the world of pets and lawns. So they do make this fake grass, though, that I saw when I was out in California that looks so real that they install it with this filtration device underneath so that, you know, everything just everything just kind of washes away, and you always never have to cut it. So there you go. That would be the other thing to look into.
One of the things that has come up several times on the program People have said, well, I learned that somebody told me that if I put some tomato juice in the 2 tablespoons of tomato juice in the dog's food every day, that resolves the problem.
Yeah, or vinegar. And again, that's acidifying the urine. It's acidic. And so it's you're just adding some acid to the diet and the body has to, you know, do something with that acid. And so to neutralize their pH of their body, out it comes. So and that's what those tablets are as well as their urinary acidifier. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Lynette. Good luck. Jill in Tacoma, Washington. It's your turn. Hi, Jill.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I have a 2-year-old English bulldog. His name is Monty. And he has like a yellowish kind of green penile discharge.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what caused that. I was looking it up on the internet and it said that, you know, it's a real common thing, but they didn't say, you know, how to treat it or, you know, what causes it or anything like that.
Well, for listeners with sensitive ears, you may want to plug your ears right now because we're going to be talking about boy parts. Does he get erections periodically, even though he's neutered? Yeah, okay.
He's not neutered.
Oh, he's not neutered. Okay. You may find that that may be part of it, is that when they get an erection, everything hangs out, and then he's dragging stuff back in, and so he's going to be predisposed to having kind of a low level of infection there. I don't know if you're planning on having him neutered. You may find that that will decrease it a little bit, although neutering does not always eliminate them being able to get an erection. And so be, you know, just, I own a boy bulldog as well. I have 2 bulldogs and he has the same. And of course he can't lick it like most dogs do because they can't bend. They're not as flexible.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm the one that does have to do the cleanup. And even though he's neutered, it still is there a little bit. It definitely was much worse when he was an intact male when I first adopted him. So talk to your veterinarian too about an antibiotic ointment. Sometimes that will help, especially if it's starting to get a little more copious. You can, there's some ointments that come with a long nozzle that you can put into a sheath and give a little squirt and massage it around, and that may help take down some of the inflammation. The medical term for this is balanoposthitis is the chemical, or the medical term for it. So if you're trying to find out more information, that's what you'd want to look up.
Okay. Well, I clean it off with, like, baby wipes.
Mm-hmm.
Should I be using something else?
No, that would probably be fine as long as they're alcohol-free, which I think most of them are, and is preferably scent-free as well, just so you don't have any other chemical irritants. That can be a pretty sensitive area. But that's all you can do. It's a boy dog, and it's part of dog maintenance when you've got an intact male.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest today, clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about your pet's health, we hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Diane in Mercer has a question, so let's go to Diane. Hi there.
Hi. I have a 6-year-old blue heeler border collie, and last year, this spring when I took him to the vet, I asked her about why do his eyes glow so much all the time, and in the morning he seems like he bumps into walls or the rocking chair.
Mm-hmm.
She looked into his eye, and she said that he had progressive retinal degeneration, and it doesn't seem to have gotten any worse, but is there anything that we could give him to help him out?
Oh, that is a really good question. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he has probably something that's an inherited disease. And so hopefully you have him, you know, he's neutered. He's not going to be used for, you know, reproduction or anything like that. And if his parents are still alive, you know, they should not be used for breeding. They're probably too old now anyways. But there are several websites that you can look at. And I've got a list here. That is, you know, resources for owners of blind dogs. And there's a one that's just called blinddogs.com that you may want to look into that is a, you know, support group for people with blind dogs and gives you lots of tips and things on how to rearrange your furniture and care for your dog and so on. And, you know, there's, you know, even some with the through the American College of Veterinary Ophthalmologists as well. So going to their website, acvo.com, you'd be able to find some information there. There's some good, you know, public relations type stuff on blind dogs. But it may progress. And that's, you know, it's very unfortunate that your dog has that. And I wish I could do something, but it's
Is it possible that it's only going to be a nighttime thing because he's been this way for a long time, I guess. He wasn't out at night much.
Uh-huh.
And I got him from a very poor farm.
Yeah.
And his nutrition when he was young was probably not very good, and that's what I always wondered that was it.
Yeah, yeah, and that could have caused it too. I mean, we do see dogs developing blindness for lots of reasons, and including things like being hypertensive or infectious causes, and so lots of other reasons. But if your veterinarian couldn't find any underlying cause, genetics is what it probably is, and it's possible it could be nutrition too.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Good luck, Diane. Appreciate your call. Let's take some more calls. Muriel in Two Rivers, Wisconsin. Hi to you.
Hi. We have a 13-year-old Pomeranian, and she has a terrible, terrible cough. It's almost like she's trying to get air. The vet says her heart is fine and her lungs are fine. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what the problem might be with her?
Well, if it's a really like a goose honky type cough, that especially happens if she gets excited or is, you know, doing a little exercise. I don't know how much she does as a 13-year-old dog. Being a small breed dog that's had her heart checked out is fine. My guess is it has to do with her big airway called the trachea. Mm-hmm. There's a condition that small breed dogs are prone to called tracheal collapse, where the cartilage rings, instead of being nice and rigid like ours are, if you were to reach up and feel your neck, you can feel your windpipe and it's firm. Mm-hmm. That's made up of cartilage. In these little guys, the cartilage tends to be very weak, and so when they get excited or start breathing heavily, their trachea collapses down, and they'll get this goose honky type cough. Things that you can do: number one, get the weight off of her if she's overweight. She needs to be slender again to help take some of the extra tissue away from the main airway. You can make sure you use a harness rather than a collar, so you don't have any pressure on her neck. And then there are some medications that you can use that may help these dogs as well. Depending on how severe the problem is, sometimes bronchodilators, if you've got some collapse of some of the main stem bronchi, may help some of these dogs. Sometimes cough suppressants, sometimes even steroids, if needed, to help take down inflammation on this airway that's collapsing down. And this would be something that can be diagnosed fairly easily through taking an x-ray, but you have to have it taken at the right time when the airways collapse down. That's why at the vet school, we typically diagnose it by doing what's called fluoroscopy, which is a moving x-ray where we lay the dog down on the table and watch it actually breathe and can see the airway, you know, snapping down and closing. So if your veterinarian can't get the diagnosis, that might be something to consider, is getting a referral for some special radiographs.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Muriel. And on to Bruce in Rice Lake. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning.
Morning.
Let's talk cats.
All right.
I have a 3-year-old neutered male, and he's in the vets right now. And I guess what my question is, he has salts in the urinary tract. Is that
crystals? Or
yeah,
okay.
Crystals, I guess.
Okay.
And they gave the poor guy, you know, kitty catheter, I guess.
Oh, he actually got obstructed.
Yes.
Okay.
And my question is this. The vet told me that this is not an uncommon thing for male cats to get.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also curious if possibly my previous diet for the cat might have caused it or...
What were you feeding your cat?
Well, I gave him a mixture of store-bought and noodle, you know, specialty cat food.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now she suggests that I go on a true specialty cat food, especially for that problem.
Yeah.
And, of course, the cat also got table scraps.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we see this problem in cats, and the first thing you need to find out is what kind of crystals or stones your cat has, what was causing the problem, because there's various diets on the market. Some of the companies are getting a little wise, though, and they're coming out with these diets that cover two of the main types of stones. They usually go by the name of an SO, struvite oxalate diet, or there's one that's the Hills people have come out with called CD Multi, which makes it easy for owners because you can use it for either type of bladder stone. We'll also see cats getting obstructed without crystals as well, where they just get some mucus plugs or other things, and it's unfortunate that male cats have such a narrow area that they have to urinate through. Many years ago I had a cat, same type of problem happened, and it happened so frequently that he ended up having some scar tissue and had to have what's called a perineal urethrostomy. Sorry, I had to think of that. Or they actually amputate part of the end of his penis and reroute things to a wider section. And he did quite well after that. Now, that's if this is your cat's first time, sometimes just doing things like increasing water consumption by giving him a kiddie water fountain, some special diets are going to, you know, keep him under control, and it may never happen again.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Yeah, yeah.
Me too. Thanks, Bruce.
All right, thank you.
Jenny and Tomahawk, on to you. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a kitty cat, a male, who's about 3 years old, and we got him as he wasn't a kitten. We got him when he was older.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And he is always scratching the doorway every time he wants to go out.
Okay.
And I have tried to break him of it by spraying him with water, which he runs away, of course, then. And
So you've got woodwork damage going on. Yeah. Well, a couple things you want to do. Number one, trim the nails. Okay, that would be something very easy for you to do. You have to do it maybe every 1 to 2 weeks to keep the damage to a minimum. By you spraying him with water, he's learned that when owners are present, don't scratch at the wood, you know, because he runs away when that happens. If you can come up with something that will do the punishment for you. And there's a product on the market called Sticky Paws. And they're really, it's like double stick carpet tape that you can put on furniture, on woodwork, and so on. And when the cat puts their feet up, it's kind of like kitty flypaper. And they don't like the feel of it under their feet. So you look into getting that. I know a lot of pet stores carry it now. It comes in strips or big sheets, depending on the area that you want to cover up. You may want to train your cat to ring a bell. I mean, and so instead of having him learn that I scratch at the woodwork, guess what? They get mad, but they let me out and I get what I want. Train him to ring a bell. And I was just at one of our local pet stores and they're actually selling bells for your door. And I don't know if you need to buy anything special, but by, you know, training him to ring a bell, and I know the bells that you can buy commercially for training purposes actually comes with a little booklet on how to train your pet to ring the bell. A lot of owners with dogs are doing this, but I've known cat owners to do the same thing. And that way it saves your woodwork and gives you an auditory cue that your cat wants to go out. So
that might help because he has such a soft cry. He doesn't even meow. It's just a little squeak.
Okay. So you're not going to be able to hear him. And that's probably why he's resorted to getting your attention some other way, which you don't find favorable. There's also a product on the market called Soft Paws. They're little plastic nail, you know, glue-on caps. But again, if he's going outside, he's going to be losing some of his defenses. That's all, you know, sort of a way of hiding his claws. So he's not going to be able to climb trees as readily or defend himself. So be careful about using those.
And while we're at it, declawing is something that I mentioned early in the show. And it's actually been banned, if I'm not mistaken, in West Hollywood?
Well, they tried a few years ago. Back in 2003, West Hollywood decided they were going to ban non-medically necessary declawing. So for behavior reasons or whatever, unless there was a medical reason like a nail bed tumor or infection or something where you had to take a claw off. And the California Veterinary Medical Association obviously, you know, threw up their hands and said, we don't want this. We don't want to have you put a ban on what we're doing. And they tried to fight it. Well, guess what? They lost. And it is now, as of June, against the law and in
West Hollywood.
In West Hollywood for declawing. In some countries, it's the same way. In England and so on, you can't do it. Maybe starting a trend. So people that have cats that, you know, it's a good idea to train them young, to use a scratching post, train yourself to trim their toenails and you know, get working on other ways other than alternatives or other than declawing because we may not be able to do that down the road.
Thanks again, Jenny. Good luck to you. Eric in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question about my 11-year-old black lab shepherd mix just was diagnosed with an aggressive malignant anal sac carcinoma.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Cancer, and it was kind of came out of the blue for me. And I guess I'd just like to know, what can I do to kind of make these last couple of months more comfortable and easy for him while we're going through this process.
Yeah, yeah. Did he have surgery done to diagnose it? Okay.
No, they did take a couple of samples with a needle.
Okay.
And sent him off to a diagnostic lab, and got confirmation on that. And my vet had said that it had already started to spread into his lymph nodes.
Oh, it has. Okay,
yeah.
So they've checked his lymph nodes too. Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. It's a horrible type of cancer to have, and doesn't respond, at least I'm not an oncologist, but I don't think it does respond very well to many of the protocols that they have.
Yeah.
You may want to call the veterinary school or have your veterinarian call and just see if there's some chemotherapy that's not going to upset your dog's quality of life, but be able to maybe give you, better time with him and extend his life a little bit. But big things to be thinking about. Well, number one is pain management. And when it comes to drugs that we use, the number one drug that the oncology department uses is one called piroxicam. And it appears to have some like anti-cancer properties as well. And so that's why they use it as a pain management tool for their cancer patients. There's a veterinary product called meloxicam that's in the same class. And you could, people will sometimes use those interchangeably. So if your veterinarian doesn't have piroxicam, which you could get through a human drugstore, that would be something else that you could try as meloxicam. There's another pain medication that's used quite commonly too, that you can use with it, called tramadol. It's a human drug, relatively inexpensive. At least it is through our clinic. I had a client that got it through a human drug store, and really expensive. So I'm not sure whether we're using like a generic formulation or whatever, but it's quite inexpensive and very helpful to make your dog comfortable. The location where the cancer is obviously going to cause some problems down the road with him being able to pass stool.
Right.
And so looking at using some stool softeners, the one I like to use, which doesn't cause, diarrhea, you can use it to effect, is called lactulose. It's a non-digestible sugar. It's a liquid form, and you can titrate it to effect, meaning you can give the right amount just to keep his stools comfortable for passage rather than not letting him have diarrhea, not letting him be, dry and hard. And that may make it easier too for him. But yeah, and a little steak now and then, hey, make his life good if you can tolerate it, just lots of love and do all those favorite things. Take lots of photos. You'll appreciate having them later.
Right. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Thanks, Eric, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Larry Mueller here with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. And those are always kind of sad, hard things to deal with.
I know.
Eric's call.
I know. And he's got, at least in this case, he's got some time that he can, do some pre-grieving and so on. I had a dog in yesterday that caught us totally off guard, ended up having a tumor on its heart.
Oh.
That was, the dog acutely became very weak and having difficulty getting blood around to its body. And so normal on the weekend, and now, end of the day, we ended up making that tough decision. And for that family, it's just, it comes as such a shock because you're just not anticipating it. So that's why I'm like, use every day you've got with your dog when you've got a diagnosis like this and have fun. Yep.
Julie in Rockford, it's your turn. Hi, Julie.
Hi, my name is Julie and I have a dog. It's a Papillon poodle mix. It's been neutered. She's about 8 years old and she licks constantly. She licks her feet. She licks herself. She licks us. And
oh.
She even licks the air.
Oh.
I mean, it's just constant. It seems like her tongue is really long. And I don't know if this is a nervous habit or...
Yeah, yeah. I had a Yorkie with an extremely long tongue. I mean, it was like longer. it didn't fit in her mouth. Most of the time it was hanging out. And she did a little bit of licking, but not to the degree that your dog is. It sounds like it's more like a compulsive disorder that, she's just, it's become a habit for her. I mean, obviously, rule out medical issues revolving the feet. I mentioned earlier in the show that for dogs, allergies are associated with itchy ears, itchy feet. But the fact that she licks the air, licks you, it's probably more of a habit. I had a patient that was, the owner had bright orange. He was a musician. Waist length, curly orange hair. I mean, like dyed orange, the fake fluorescent orange. And waist length hair. And his dog had a licking compulsive disorder too. It would lick the floors, lick the couch, lick him. And we twice had to go in surgically and remove orange hairballs from this dog. Yeah. I mean, it was disgusting because you knew it was the owner's hair. So we got him wearing a hairnet around the house and taught the dog to redirect its licking. We gave it a hockey puck. And it was, we has had hockey pucks around the house and trained the dog to lick that over anything else. And it worked in that it kept the dog from licking surfaces that would harbor hair because the hockey puck you could wash off. It didn't keep the hair on it. And it was, you know, just a small surface. So you may want to look at seeing if you can, you know, redirect the dog to something more appropriate. But it didn't work with mine, and I, you know, she wasn't quite as bad as yours, but this would be something that I think working with a behaviorist may be in order.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we call her part cat because it's almost like she gives us baths.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, a certified applied animal behaviorist might be in the cards for you.
That would be, because this would be something that we probably don't need veterinary care from the standpoint of medical management. It's more, you know, change behavior and changing the way you're interacting and responding to your dog's behavior and giving them some new behaviors to try, like the hockey puck. So,
all right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Julie, for calling. And Bill in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Bill.
Hi, thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I've got a 16-year-old Malinois Elkhound cross.
An older, oh my goodness, for a large breed dog, that's
pretty
getting
old.
Up there.
Well, she's been a handful. She was on Ritalin for about 8-9 years, was diagnosed with an FXW as being hyperactive, which is sort of a oxymoron with
okay.
a Malinois.
Okay.
But she just is getting over a very, very severe urinary infection, which hit the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
But we've noticed that she is going deaf, and I've also noticed some confusion, and I'm wondering if the confusion has to do with an onset of dementia or could possibly be related to the kidney infection.
Well, very good observation that you're noticing this. Sometimes dogs with kidney disease will become hypertensive. It's very common for that. That's one of the most common reasons for dogs to become hypertensive is with kidney disease. And so that could be affecting her mentation if she's walking around with a headache or having little, you know, vascular accidents or something. So getting her blood pressure checked should be part of her care with her kidney disease, and I hope that that's being managed. But we do see populations of dog. I just had a 17-year-old dog in that the owner says, well, just wander into a room and stand there and like stare at the wall, get lost in corners.
That's
you know,
a lot of what she's doing.
Yeah, just vocalize, wandering at night, and sometimes doesn't recognize the owner, having accidents in the house once in a while when it was perfectly housebroken.
Yep.
And those are all very common symptoms of, we call it canine cognitive decline. And the treatment for it, there's a few things you can do. Number one, rule out medical reasons, and you can go as far as even going getting an MRI done to look for a brain tumor if you want to go that far. But because we do sometimes see dogs with small brain tumors that can be affecting their mentation. The drug that's on the market, there's one called Anapril. You could talk to your veterinarian about that. It's it's similar to some drugs that are used in treating Parkinson's disease in people. The chemical name is selegiline, it's you know, used in older patients and helps some of them. There's also a diet on the market. I know this sounds weird, but a diet by Hill's called BD diet, brain diet, that is rich in antioxidants. And for some dogs with mild cognition changes, or even moderate cognition changes, we've seen some improvement with it as well. So by changing the diet. But I wouldn't do that with your dog having underlying kidney disease, again, without your veterinarian, you know,
no,
knowing what you're doing.
No, we're in the middle of treating that, and so I've got to wait probably several weeks yet before we know if she's clear of the kidney disease.
Good, good.
Well, good luck, Bill.
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Jackie in Avoca, your turn now. Hi, Jackie.
Hi there. We have a Pomchi.
Okay.
And have you heard of a Pomchi?
Well,
it's a Pomeranian.
Pomian mixed with a Yorkie, I bet.
With a Chihuahua.
A Chihuahua. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we adopted him out of a shelter in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And his personality is just wonderful. I wonder if the two breeds that we think they are is the cause of that. I mean, he's not nervous. He's not afraid of thunder. He loves to ride in the car. He loves all animals. He loves all people.
Oh, you're so lucky. Yeah.
I know. He barks very rarely. And we did look up on the internet, and there wasn't too much there about a Pomchi, but they had quite a list of characteristics and personality.
Well, and you know, it's luck of the draw. Whenever you put, we brought this up earlier too, is that when you've got mixed breed dogs like this, it's really genetically. You have no idea how it's going to turn out. You could have more Pomeranian personality, more Chihuahua personality. And we know that personality, you know, yes, there's some heritable things, like, you know, the dogs that are extremely controlling and the dogs that are extremely fearful. That seems to be, you know, passed on from parents to offspring. Mm. So you always want to avoid the extremes when you're breeding. But we also know that it has to do with nurturing as well. And it may be that before this guy got into a shelter, he had a lot of exposure to kids. He went to doggy kindergarten and doggy obedience.
And he was neutered.
And he had everything, you know, he was raised correctly. And that may have been why you've got a dog. So you have to say thank you to the people that had him before.
Well, that's certainly true. Yeah. Now, for the Pomeranian part, he's got a curly tail.
Okay.
And Chihuahua part, he's got the face of a Chihuahua and the eyes like that.
Uh-huh.
So that's how he came out.
Okay.
Did they do that on purpose? Are they trying to develop a breed?
Just an article in the Cap Times last night regarding this, and there's so many mixed breed dogs now where they're breeding, like, Maltese mixed with Yorkies, and I actually, my quote, and I won't say the word, but I would love to see a bulldog crossed with a Shih Tzu, and we can't tell you what the combination's going to be, but take the first part of both of those, and now you've got a long-haired bulldog like that. Now, I'm waiting to see that come in my clinic, This is a trend. As a veterinarian, I'm not happy about it because I think people are expecting a lot when they get these mixed breed dogs that they're going to have the best of both breeds, but you could get the worst of both breeds as well.
Thanks, Jackie. You're a lucky gal. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Your Pet's Health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call. We've lots of dog questions today, but a few cats as well. And whatever your breed or type, feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Steve in Paradise Valley.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Where's Paradise Valley?
It's out by Burlington, between Burlington and Lake Geneva.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, beautiful. It is like paradise here. Hey, just a real quick comment on the person who had the dog that was urinating and killing the grass.
Yeah,
What we do is I started working for an organic company in Illinois that does soil amendments, and it's bacteria and fungus for the soil. And what they had me start doing with customers was if this happens, you pour a can of pop on it immediately. The sweetness in the pop, corn gluten works well too, will boost the bacteria content in the soil like almost immediately, and it starts to devour that urine and
digest the ammonia. Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, all right.
And it seems to work. I think if you wait a day, it's almost too late.
Now, does it matter what kind of soda you use?
Cheap soda.
Yeah, cheap.
Okay.
And expensive.
It becomes cost efficient.
All right. Well, I've never heard of that one. That's, you know, and every time we get a phone call on this, I get all these, like, new home remedies, and I'm just wondering how that's working. But when, you know, that's very strange.
It's the bacteria in there, you know.
Yeah.
And the products that we sell to get rid of the fungus off the grass, it's the same thing. You just add all this. You want the bacteria to create an environment so the fungus doesn't want to be there anymore.
Okay.
The ammonia doesn't want to be there anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay. All right.
And I would, I would probably not use the diet then.
No, because that has no sugar in it.
No sugar in that one.
So I wonder if it attracts ants and bees.
Could.
All
right. Never know. Nancy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi there. Well, I have a 2-year-old neutered male cat. And periodically he'll spray a substance that smells like dead fish.
Oh.
And it kind of like surprises him and us at the same time.
Oh, I know exactly what it is. Yeah, it's probably the secretion that's coming from his anal glands or sacs that sit on either side of the rectum. And they don't have voluntary control over them. They normally empty when they have a bowel movement, but sometimes they will fill up. And if something startles him and causes his anal sphincter to contract, they may squeeze even just one drop of that stuff is enough to perfume your home. And it's very foul, metallic-y smelling. I think your fish smell, that's a good way to describe it as well. Couple things that you may want to talk to your veterinarian about. One is the next time you're in for an exam, ask your veterinarian to check to see if the anal glands are full. With cats, they don't have to endure a rectal like dogs do. Anatomically, they're a little bit different the way they're positioned. So you can, and I teach owners how to squeeze on either side with some Kleenex, obviously, between your hand and the rectum to empty some of the contents out. There are some odor eliminators that you can use as well. The one that I find that just works the best, and I've used it in the clinic for years, is called AOE, Animal Odor Eliminator. And I'm sure you can probably find that online.
That's something you put on the area that they've sprayed?
No, you can use it on the pet. You can use it in the environment. It comes in as a concentrate, and you just mix it up with water in a spray bottle and spritz it. It can be used on skin, so it's biologically converts it to something that doesn't smell, and it's been the only thing that I found in my career that really works well.
AOE, Animal Eliminator.
Animal Odor Eliminator. No, I don't want to eliminate the animals, just the odor.
Oh, yeah. Animal Odor Eliminator. Oh,
this is really interesting, too. We have a litter mate, a sister of his, and whenever this happens, she loves to lick it up.
Oh, I know. Oh. Well, you know, and the reason why they produce this is obviously to leave some type of scent on their stool that is, can identify them to other animals. Remember, skunks have the same type of thing, although they have more voluntary control over it, obviously. And have perfected the art of spraying this foul-smelling stuff. So, Matt, just be glad your cat isn't a skunk. Yeah.
So it's kind of like taking him to the vet and learning how to squeeze the glands?
Yep, that would be something that we can show you, definitely show you how to do, because we don't like to do it ourselves. And if we can teach an owner to do it, yay!
Okay.
Thanks, Nancy. Thanks a lot for calling. All right, on to Kristen in Mauston. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 7-year-old Cocker Spaniel who has little sores in between her toes. They almost look like little lumps.
Mm-hmm.
And she's constantly licking them.
Yeah, yeah. My guess is if the tissue's actually raised in those areas between her toes, and I guess it's hairless too. Did you find there's hair missing on them?
She is starting to chew it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's probably got some infection there. My own dog, being a bulldog, they get what's called interdigital dermatitis quite commonly as well. Maybe related to allergies. Could just be a skin infection that is occurring there. Unfortunately, for treating this, you're looking at long-term antibiotics. They are typically a deep skin infection, and 6 to 8 weeks is what's used for many of these cases to get under control. And the mistakes we make as veterinarians and as pet owners is stopping too soon. And so you may treat for the standard, 3 weeks like we do most skin infections, and it may partially clear up, and then it comes back with a vengeance. So if it's multiple spots, it's very unlikely that it's anything like a foreign body. I have had dogs that have gotten thorns up their feet, and they have maybe one single area between the toes that's kind of swollen, and we explore it and we find foreign bodies. But multiple toes being affected, my guess is that we've got interdigital dermatitis.
Okay, and she did have one, there was just one, and she had it tested, and they said it was yeast.
Okay.
And now she's got it in lots of toes.
Yeah, and yeast infections, again, that requires sometimes a good month of therapy using the appropriate systemic medication. So usually we use a drug called ketoconazole is the most common one that we use for dogs.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Kristen. Harv in Washburn, your turn. Hi, Harv.
Hi. Yeah, I got a little Yorkie that's experiencing some seizures and whatnot.
Mm.
And we just had the liver thing done on her, and that came back normal, so I just, like some more suggestions. I've heard that it's because they're, low on sugar
and
blood.
How old is your dog?
Oh, she's just about 3.
3 years old. Okay, and how long has this been going on?
I just started last month.
So, Yorkies are very prone to, and I'm glad your veterinarian looked into liver disease, something called a portocaval shunt, it's a vascular abnormality, the intestines and the liver, so toxins build up in the system and it can affect their brain, and Yorkies are like the textbook dog that gets this fairly commonly. It would be unlikely that your dog would start seizuring with this as a three-year-old. Younger dogs, that would be higher up on our rule-out list. You know, we do see epilepsy in the breed, and it's something that usually starts when they're, you know, 2 or 3 years of age. Older dogs, we get worried about things like brain tumors and things like that. But if your veterinarian has ruled out metabolic problems, meaning that her blood sugar isn't low, her liver problem is, you know, does not have a liver problem. If her skull is shaped normally, she doesn't have hydrocephalus, which is the domed skull, which we can see in some lines of Yorkies as well. Then it may just be one of these, you know, we just call it epilepsy, and it's needs to be managed medically. You're looking at daily medication, typically phenobarbital is a drug of choice for most dogs if they can tolerate it. The other one we use is called potassium bromide. And again, you know, it's something that's you're not going to cure her. We're trying to cut her seizures down to a very low frequency without making her toxic with her medication and still making her be a bright and alert and active dog.
Okay, that wouldn't help to, you know, make sure that her blood sugar is up by, you know, letting her eat half of my jelly donut and stuff like that?
Well, if your veterinarian is showing that she does have, you know, chronically low blood sugar, you know, we sometimes will see, especially in baby Yorkies, glycogen storage problems where they don't have enough of the sugar-based material in the liver called glycogen, and they need to eat more frequently. But a three-year-old dog, I think all you're going to be doing is packing on some weight, and that's not going to help probably her bad knees, which she has being a Yorkie as well. So I'd avoid the donuts.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Arv.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Jericho in West Allis, your turn. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The issue I'm having is I have a six-month-old yellow lab pit bull mix that we got from the Humane Society about 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to use crate training for her and our other dog.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having a behavior issue with she just barks and whines when she's in her crate.
Okay.
And we've talked to our veterinarian, we've talked to a couple of trainers, and we've tried different things. We've even gone as far as trying a mild shock collar, which
Ooh.
I wasn't thrilled about
okay.
trying.
Yeah.
And nothing seems to help. She'll bark right through the shock.
Now, does she willingly go into her crate?
She will willingly go in there. She loves going into it.
Okay.
It's just it's like if she knows we're in the house,
okay,
but we're not in the room with
okay.
the crate,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
she yips and barks. And
okay.
I'm just wondering a little input about what we could try or...
Well, some simple things. You know, typically when we're crate training a dog and getting them comfortable with being in the crate, you start out with very short periods of time in there where they learn to lay down and relax, giving them something that can keep them occupied. Like, you know, the typical recommendation is a Kong toy that's stuffed with something.
Yeah.
Kong just happens to be one of the brand names of a hollow, pretty much indestructible toy, but there's lots of things like that out there that, again, is going to give her something to keep her occupied. So she's in there for a few minutes, and she learns that I lay here quietly, and guess what? When she's quiet, she gets let out. My bet is that you've been letting her out while she's been barking, and she's learned that barking is what gets me to get out of my crate. So going back to the drawing board again and starting back with shorter stays, giving her that opportunity. She goes in willingly. That's great. Getting her to lay down and relax. Even while you're in the room, get up, let her out. Put her back in again. Be a little bit further away from the crate. You know, she stays quiet. She's comfortable. Let her out again. And gradually increase the amount of time that she spends in the crate. It's possible that she's got a little bit of separation anxiety as well. And I mentioned earlier in the show, one of the things that you can try is either a DAP collar or... this dog appeasement pheromone is also available in a plug-in variety. And for some dogs with mild anxiety, that might help. You can, if you've got a crate in one room, plugging in something like that in the wall, it lasts for about a month. Can't hurt. Might as well, you know, it might be something worth trying.
Okay, yeah, I'll definitely give that a shot. Thank you very much.
You're
yep,
welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Evelyn and Racine, hi to you.
Hello, good morning. I have a 2-year-old German Shepherd. It's a male. who has recently been diagnosed with pancreatic insufficiency.
Oh, okay.
They've done the TLI test, and his number was 3.7.
Okay.
Which I understand it is, you know, it's like at the beginning stages. We have, the vet has recommended that we feed him both the canned and the dry food of prescription ID.
Okay, a low-fat diet, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Low-fat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now he's, and he's also on Viokase powder.
Okay, which is an enzyme. What this condition is, just for people listening, is common problem in German Shepherds, their pancreas just doesn't produce enough of the digestive enzymes they need to be able to metabolize their food and get it absorbed appropriately. And so they end up with chronic diarrhea. And so they've done some tests, probably sent it off to a lab in Texas where they the most of the GI work is done. And your sounds like your dog is being treated appropriately.
Yeah. Now, you know, the one question, the or several, he's on like two teaspoons of the Viokase with each feeding, which is twice a day, and thinking of tapering that off to one teaspoon.
Well, you can try seeing if it has any effect. I mean, it's one of those things where every dog's an individual, and you know, I would gradually taper down, and if you start noticing that he's getting the greasy stools or is, you know, starting to lose weight, then obviously go back to what's been recommended by your veterinarian.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, our guest here on the Ideas Network. We're talking your pet's health now with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller. Really happy to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Sandy, we were talking about the lunar cycle. You and I were talking about that. And you have some reports of research on veterinary visits during...
It's interesting. I mean, all along, when I used to do emergency work, we'd always say, you know, when it's a full moon, all the crazies come out, or we get more emergencies in. And it just seems to be like, you know, like, yeah, you know, why is that? Well, Colorado State University did a study looking at over the last 10 years, looking at the lunar cycle and the number of emergencies for dogs and cats coming into their clinic. And on full moon days, there was 23% increase in the business in cats and 28% in dogs. So, I mean, that's a huge number of more cases that happen on during a full moon. They don't know why. They were thinking, oh, maybe it's because cats are out hunting because they can see better at night. But that wouldn't account for the dogs because not many dogs are out hunting. So if anybody has any ideas why, that's just kind of just something that we've, you know, that your tax dollars at work right there.
Well, I tell you what, for veterinarians, actually, if you have an emergency shelter in terms of staffing.
Yeah. You got to staff at a full moon. Yeah.
Staff at a full moon.
Yeah.
Beth in Black River Falls. Hi to you.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, a couple of comments and then a question. We recently, my husband and I, had two dogs. One was a lab Dalmatian mix, and the other was a black lab. And we unfortunately had to put both of them down within 2 months.
Oh.
It's been really rough. We're still crying almost every day about them.
Yeah.
They were great dogs. And we did take Miko, the one that had lymphoma, down to the university, and everyone there was so wonderful.
Thank you.
Were very, very impressed. So I wanted to pass that on, and how much we enjoyed having his last moments, you know, the support of all of you. Now, we also have a cat, Mo, and since the dogs have been gone, he's been very, very, very lonesome. But Mo would use his litter box, but now that the dogs are gone, he's kind of taken over both personalities of both our dogs, so we find that quite amusing, but he's an inside-outside cat. He now sits at the door like our Dalmatian lab cross did. And my question is, how can we get him back to use the litter box? Because he won't use it now. He sits at the door like Nico used to do with his nose basically pressed against the door when he had to go outside.
Yeah, so he's urinating and defecating out of the box.
He is doing it outside. He's not doing it in the house.
Okay.
Which is
so
good.
Okay, so he's preferring to go to the bathroom outside, then use the litter box in the house.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, boy, that's a strange one. And I don't know. I mean, I know this sounds kind of like way out there, but did the dogs happen to like empty the litter box for him, if you catch my drift? You know, kitty fritters for lunch or no?
Well, Mikko did when he could sneak down the basement.
Okay. Okay.
And we usually kept the dogs upstairs because of that, because
okay,
we found him
okay
with litter all over his nose.
Okay.
Once, and we're like,
well,
I'm,
I just, you know, because maybe if the dogs are doing that and the litter box isn't being kept clean, that now, you know, because you're not doing as much because the dogs used to do it. That was just something that came up. But
I've got an idea.
You do? What is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, my it's down in the basement.
Basement. Yeah, and I'm not, that's, yeah.
Is well, there, no, actually, we moved it back upstairs,
oh,
and he's refusing to use a litter box.
Okay.
We have one even outside on our front porch.
Do you have one in the basement?
Because he's out there quite a bit. No, we don't anymore. One's up. They're both. One's on our front porch, and the other one is in the kitchen.
And it may be that he likes the basement to go to the bathroom in. So using that may be because you've moved it to a spot, and especially moving it to the kitchen if he eats in the kitchen.
Okay.
As well, cats don't like to eat near where their litter box is, and so he may have a litter box aversion because of where you've put it over, you know, rather than it be anything to do with the dogs. You've just put it in a more convenient spot for you, which is not a very favorable spot for him, and so now he's decided that going outside is better than urinating and defecating in my kitchen. So so put a litter box, you know, instead of playing, you know, like where's the litter box, you know, button who's got the button with the litter box. Put it down, get another one and put it down in the basement. And
take him down there and show him.
Show him down. And remember, the size of the litter box needs to be about 1.5 times the length of the cat's box from, or the cat's body from nose to rear end, not to end of the tail. So big litter box, preferably soft, scoopable, sandy litter. But if he's developed a taste for the outdoors, there's a product on the market that's called Cat Attract that kind of smells like silage. They actually make a litter with it in it now. And some cats have been going to the bathroom outside will go back to using a litter box when this type of litter or additive is used because it kind of smells like the outdoors. So you may want to look into trying that. One thing I'm going to tell you not to get is this, as Larry mentioned earlier, a self-flushing, self-washing litter box that actually hooks up to your plumbing. I mean, imagine if the cat all of a sudden has to go and it's on rinse cycle, you know, this thing will actually spin and blow. It's got a blower in it where it cleans it out and, you know, just use a litter scoop. I mean, clean it rather than have, you know, I mean, this is the ultimate in laziness is having, you know, something electronic like that. It's just going to scare the cat.
Yeah, I know. That's not for me. And if he really wants to go that bad, he can learn to use the toilet like my son's cat did.
Okay.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Sometimes it's a question the cats don't want to go in the basement because of the furnace and
that's
all
right.
That.
Yeah, because it's scary. They have to go down the stairs, especially older cats that are arthritic. All of a sudden, the stairs become an issue for them. And, you know, why walk all the way down there when that, you know, comforter on the bed is so absorbent, you know?
Susan in the Twin Cities. Hi to you.
Hi. Say, I got a good question for you, Sandy.
Okay.
We are on our fourth Portuguese water dog. We just lost two of them in the last year, actually three, but I don't want to go into that.
Uh-huh.
And we, my husband and I are the empty nesters, so we decided we didn't want any more puppies. So we had a 11-month-old Porty shipped up from Louisiana.
Okay.
From a breeder who was going to have her name is Gilly, be a show dog. And she ended up not doing very well in the ring. She was just, it wasn't going to work, and they didn't think it was something they could train her to do. So she was one of the sellers, so we bought her. We flew her up on the airlines, air cargo, and she was very, she had five other Portuguese that Gilly played with every day, and she was very involved in that group of dogs.
Uh-huh.
So when we got her, of course, she was really traumatized by it, I think. And then, you know, we brought her home. The next day, my 21-year-old came home from college, and he had a big backpack on, and he kind of had some facial hair and long hair, and he was excited about the new dog. He came into the house, and the Gilly went to greet him, and he kind of came in with his arms out and just scared her silly.
Yeah,
and this is probably 5 months ago,
oh,
and
boy.
This dog cannot even bear to be in the same room with them.
Oh.
She's a great dog.
Yeah.
She's obedient. She's smart. We just were out of town. I'm on my way home now from northern Minnesota. He was with us in a small cabin, and it got probably 30% better. She can now be in the same room with them, but if he makes a quick move, she, you know, gets very nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what do I do?
Well,
and he wants to be friends with this dog.
Yeah, and that may be part of the reason is he's trying too hard, you know. She was a young dog, still a puppy at 11 months of age, so don't fool yourself that way. She may have been raised by a woman, never got exposed to people with facial hair or the stature of your son. You throw a backpack on his back, changes his silhouette, and all of a sudden, wow, he's this scary person. And then he approached her totally wrong, arms extended, kind of trying to lean over and, you know, probably made the dog very frightened. Well, obviously made the dog very frightened. So, things to try. He's got to back off, okay? When he's around, have him sitting down, not looking at the dog, not reaching for the dog. Does she have favorite things like favorite toys, favorite treats? That's what you need to find. And, you know, if she really is into tennis ball, then you give him a bunch of tennis balls and he tosses balls to her. Again, without making big wide arm movements where she starts to, you know, accept him, you know, being in that kind of subordinate sitting down position. And eventually, over time, you know, hopefully she'll adjust to him being there and you can, you know, he can be standing up. And it's just going to take an extraordinary amount of time, but it can happen. It can happen. And I think he may just be, like I said, trying too hard. If he's trying to, you know, go down and be in the dog's face or reaching for the dog or trying to touch the dog, just have him back off and not do that and start with little baby steps. And then maybe they'll become friends.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Susan. Phyllis in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Phyllis.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a cat that was a throwaway, literally, and she was feline leukemic. I know that. I took her to a vet, and she used her glove finger to clean her anal glands, not once, but twice, and she was only a kitten.
Mm-hmm.
And now she appears to have problems with defecating. I don't know whether she has too dry a stool, but she'll go out and she'll dig a hole, and she'll squat, nothing. And, and sometimes she digs 5, 6, 7 holes and still hasn't relieved herself.
Okay, yeah, yeah. It probably has nothing to do with what the veterinarian did with, you know, with a glove. I wear a glove when I express cat's anal glands. I just don't do it internally, externally. Cats don't see the humor in having rectals done. One thing that just alarms me is you've got a feline leukemia positive cat and she's going outside. No. You got to keep her indoors for a couple of reasons. One, she's a Typhoid Mary, and she's going to be passing this disease on to every cat that she has contact with. So, you know, make sure that you keep her inside. Also, other cats can be carrying minor diseases, and feline leukemia is one of these diseases that suppresses their immune system. It's going to make her more predisposed to picking up other bugs as well. So for her to be able to live a comfortable life, you got to keep her inside. You know, why she's having trouble defecating, yes, I mean, she could be dehydrated, maybe passing firm stool and having trouble that way. She could have big lymph nodes in, you know, caudal abdomen and so on that could be causing some troubles that's associated with her disease. It's time to get her back into a veterinarian. These cats that have this disease need to be checked much more frequently than other cats because, of, you know, obviously their disease is in most cases fatal fairly quickly. So, you know, for her sake and the sake of the cat world, keep her indoors and get her into your vet to have her abdomen palpated and looked at to see if there's anything that they can do about it.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much, Phyllis. Janice in West Allis, your turn. Hi, Janice.
Hi. Hi. I just have a general question. What your opinion is about doing, like, vaccinations and, like, teeth cleaning all at the same time, you know, multiple things in one visit. It seems like both in the cats and dogs a lot to do to a little body.
Yeah.
And I just wondered what your opinion was. I try to divide things up when I can, but they say, you know, you can do it all at one time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely more of a purist and like to see things separated. I get people asking all the time, oh, can you, you know, spay the dog and clean its teeth at the same time or do some other surgery and clean the teeth? Remember, when you're doing dental work, you're releasing bacteria. And if you've got cut tissue, really run the risk of seeding infection elsewhere. through the bloodstream. So I don't like to do surgery and dentistry at the same time. Preferably when you're vaccinating, I mean, they need to have a very functional immune system to be able to respond to the vaccine. And to take an animal and stress them and put them under anesthesia and do a medical procedure and vaccinate them at the same time, they're obviously not going to receive probably the full benefit from the vaccine. It most likely is not going to be an issue, but why take the chance? And so I'd rather, if it's a really fractious animal and the only way you can deal with them is when they're knocked out and let's do everything in one swoop, by all means do that, because that's going to be the least stressful thing for the patient. But if you can, try to divide it up.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
A lot for calling. Mark and Racine, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi. First thing is, I would suggest the woman who's got a cat who's having difficulty defecating, she might try giving it canned food instead of dry food to get more moisture moving through the system so that the cat has softer stools.
If that's what the cat's problem is,
right,
we don't know. Yes,
sure.
Right.
But that's one possibility. The next thing is, I also have a dog who has sort of gender and terror issues. This is a formerly abused dog, and we've had him for a year and a half. And he's still extremely anxious around me, not around my wife too much. But he's kind of very formal. He does this sort of gulp, yawning, globus hystericus thing.
Yeah.
And most of the time when I'm around, he kind of keeps his head and tail down and kind of stays on the other side of the table from me.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if this pheromone thing might be useful for the dog, or if there are... ways I might be able to sort of, I've actually thought about benzodiazepines for the dog, but...
Yeah, I mean, the pheromone, the DAP, can't hurt. I mean, most of the research that's been done on it, they've marketed it for separation anxiety, big research study that happened in France, I believe, looking at puppies and introducing new dogs into the household and the time it took for them to start being comfortable at night by themselves and sleeping through the night, and found that, you know, new puppies sleep through the night. Whether it's going to help your dog or not, it won't hurt, so let's give it a try.
Sure.
Using medical management, if you have, you know, tried, you know, the behavior stuff that we've talked about briefly, and again, you really need to work with somebody that can help you with the desensitization program. Trying to describe it on the radio in a brief period of time, you just are not going to...
Well, you think something like flooding might work?
Typically flooding doesn't work because you never stick with it long enough. Mm-hmm. And so just exposing the dog to the fearful thing, you end up...
Further,
right. So that typically fails. But... you know, working with a certified animal behaviorist definitely, I think, is in order when you're dealing with something this severe. But medical management may help. You have to be careful, though. You mentioned benzodiazepines, which is Valium, and all the other drugs that are like that. That can have what's called a disinhibition effect. If you've got a dog that's fearful and a biter, we've noticed that dogs that go on that drug may be more inclined to bite. They will be inhibited from biting with their fear, and now you take the fear away, and the dog may say, oh, fine, okay, I'll just bite the boogeyman rather than try to retreat. Mm-hmm. So contraindicated in dogs with fear-related aggression.
Okay.
But there are other drugs that we can use that are psychoactive drugs, and again, this would be something that needs to be, you know, it's not just a blanket, you know,
sure,
put your dog on
those,
with your veterinarian and find one that's going to be appropriate for your dog.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Jackie in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Jackie.
I love your sense of humor.
Thank you.
I've been working with a 5-year-old Jack Russell Chihuahua rescue with a silent whistle. I have a Himalayan cat who went deaf, will be 2 years ago, 2 years in September, and she responds to that.
She's not totally deaf then, yeah.
Well, but I could clap my hands behind her, she hears nothing.
Okay.
She's
probably hearing certain frequencies, and she's hearing the frequency of the whistle.
Is that something that somebody who thinks that their dog or cat is deaf could try?
Definitely. There's testing that can be done for hearing impaired animals as well. It's a little more involved, unlike us, where you can sit with headphones on to hear it, you know, which ear to hear it in, and they can go through the different ranges of tones. Obviously, we can't ask dogs, you know, which side are you hearing it in? So they put little electrodes under their scalp, and they do what's called a brainstemmed audio evoked response. And breeders will do this, especially in dogs that are prone to have being deaf, like Dalmatians. You can have unilateral deaf dogs, and they don't want to be breeding them because they can pass that trait on. So that is one way of truly assessing whether the animal is deaf or not and able to hear. You're doing everything, making different sounds, different tones, and you found something that your cat responds to. It's wonderful. So maybe that'll work with, giving your cat the ability to respond to you a little bit better.
Sure.
So. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Gay in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Gay.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a Dalmatian that was a year in March, and she's a purebred. And I've had other Dalmatians, but this is the only dog in my life that I've ever had that drools. If you take a bite of a sandwich, this dog just drools and drools.
Oh, Pavlov's dog, yes. Yeah. Oh, turns on the waterworks, yeah. And it's, food will stimulate salivation. It happens with us. It happens with dogs. And she just may have very loose lips or very active salivary glands, or has been trained that, it's like mm-hmm. the bell that Pavlov rang, where when the bell rang, the dog started drooling. You didn't even need to have the food there anymore. So you sitting down at the table, even without the presence of food, may trigger a dog to start to drool because they're anticipating that they may get something. So, boy, I have the same problem with my dogs. And I, just make sure that I go on slobber patrol a couple times a week and wipe up any drool that stuck to things that on my hands and knees, and always carry a, napkin or a towel with me to wipe mouths. That best thing, have the dog out of the room when you're eating,
okay.
And that way you don't have to worry about it.
Thanks, Gabe.
I didn't think there was anything, but I'd ask. Thanks a lot.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Dave in Harshaw, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We had some friends up visiting last week, and our 10-month-old Golden decided to sneak into the bedroom and help herself to some jewelry.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so we weren't sure exactly how much she'd eaten. But about 2 days after that, she passed out at least 3 dangly earrings and a pendant.
Okay.
Okay. And I haven't noticed anything else since then. She seems to be acting normal.
Mm-hmm.
Her stool seems to be okay. No problem with urinating.
Yeah.
Gums have a good color. Yeah.
What I'd be worried about is, depending on the quality of the jewelry, some type of a metal toxicity. Jewelry is not meant for consumption, and if there's lead in it or zinc, those can be very toxic for dogs. What I would be recommending is take your dog into the veterinarian and get an X-ray done. If it's metallic, you'll see it, and then if it's empty, you don't have to worry.
You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. So this is can be a big problem with dogs, not only eating stuff like that, but your pocket change. Pennies, a lot of them are zinc with just a little bit of a copper wafer, and people don't realize it, but a penny or two, that can stay in there and cause major problems. So get that jewelry checked out, and
good luck.
I know, and I hope he's washing it before he gives it back to the friends.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I tell you, we got about a minute here, and you said there's a new dewormer out for cats.
Oh, I'm so happy about this. Yeah. Bears come out with one that is a spot-on dewormer called Profender, and it's for tapeworms, roundworms, and hookworms. And in the past, tapeworm medication is notoriously probably one of the most foul-tasting things on the face of the earth. And I've had trouble getting into pets. Even as a veterinarian who's mastered pilling, I have a hard time. Now it's going to be so easy. It's just a spot on, and you've got them treated. So if you see tapeworm segments, talk to your vet about this. It does make life a whole lot easier for everybody.
And what's the name of it again?
Profender. Profender.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
That's a great way to end.
Okay.
Sandy, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And you'll be back, and we'll do this again, I hope.
Sounds good.
All right. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest today, clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. And, of course, she will be back, and we will do this all over again, talk about some more pet issues, and probably she'll come with some more great research and other new products. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.